You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega.
En lo que a mí se refiere, concluye mi tarea como primer secretario del Comité Central del Partido Comunista de Cuba.
Earlier this week in Cuba, Raúl Castro, the younger brother of Fidel Castro, stepped down as the first secretary of the Communist Party. Cuba has been led by a Castro for more than 60 years. The Castros have been controversial figures across the globe, particularly for their human rights violations against the Cubans who oppose them. Here is Fidel Castro in a rare interview speaking to Barbara Walters.
Barbara, have you ever seen a demonstration in Cuba that has been suppressed with tear gas?
Do you allow demonstrations at all?
And do you allow them? Here we don't have them.
But do you allow them if someone wanted to?
Why do we need to prevent anything that doesn't happen at all?
The change in leadership also comes at a time when the island is dealing with a severe economic crisis. Sanctions from the United States and a decline in aid from Venezuela has led to an 11% economic decline in 2020. In addition, the country is also struggling with the pandemic, and its citizens have been experiencing shortages of food and medicine. So we turn to Carmen Cecin, a reporter with NBCNews.com and NBC Latino, to talk about what the retirement of Raúl Castro signals for changes in Cuba. Carmen, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thank you, Tanzina. It's nice to be here.
What will Raúl Castro be remembered for specifically? He took over after his brother passed away, his brother Fidel passed away.
So I think both figures, Raúl and Fidel Castro, are polarizing figures. So people either love them or hate them.
And we're talking about people in Cuba or people or Cubans across the world?
I would say people in Cuba either love them or hate them, whereas those who are in other parts of the world left Cuba because they weren't happy. So they hate them. Mm-hmm. But the ones in Cuba, even though some people don't express it openly, you know, people I think fall on both sides as well. There are people who do love them, adore them. They feel that they really turned Cuba around. They helped educating the public, helped with the healthcare system, and they did have achievements in that. But others will view the Castros as dictators who ruled with an iron fist and abused human rights by executing opponents or sending them to jail. They always had a strong grip on all aspects of society in the past few decades. So. Some people will remember that, the stagnant economy, while others will feel that if it wasn't for the Castros, Cuba will be, you know, a colony of the United States.
Was there something that Raúl Castro in particular was known for? Did he pretty much continue his brother Fidel's legacy?
He was more of a reformist. So when he took power, he promised back in 2011 economic reforms that Cuba badly needed. Cuba had a stagnant economy for a long time, and people were looking for a bigger economic opening. He did promise that back in 2011. Those promises haven't been fulfilled, and a lot of people are frustrated because of that. He also introduced internet to Cuba, which was a big deal a few years ago. Even though it's still expensive, that's given people access to information they didn't have before and ways to organize when there have been protests.
A couple of years ago, Cuba was accepting Americans and others for vacations and accepting tourism from the United States. That has since slowed down. Tell me about what the economic situation is on the ground in Cuba right now. Has that had a direct impact? Are Cubans on the ground expecting with this change that there will be more openness to a relationship with the United States, whether it's tourism or otherwise?
The economic situation in Cuba is dire right now. There are long lines just to buy basic foods, whatever happens to show up in the stores that day. Sometimes you get to the front of the line and they ran out of whatever they went there to buy. So that's the main focus of the average Cuban. Their families eating one meal a day. They have maybe juice or yogurt for breakfast, whatever they can find. They have a meal in the late afternoon and then a snack before they go to sleep. The shortages began after the decline in aid from Venezuela and U.S. sanctions. So the last time I was in Cuba back in the summer of 2019, when you spoke to entrepreneurs, they expressed their disillusionment with the decline in U.S. tourism, especially the cruise ships, because it was less money for them. But I think what really did it to them and a lot of economies throughout the world was the pandemic. Pandemic brought tourism to a complete halt, and that has had a devastating effect on their economy. And that's how you see that it shrank 11%. Now with Biden as president, I don't expect there to be a huge change in U.S. policy toward Cuba. Biden did campaign at the very beginning on Cuba, saying that he would go back to where Obama left off. But right around this time last year, that narrative kind of shifted, and he started saying that he would focus on human rights and that he would reverse some of Trump's measures against Cuba, like limits on remittances and travel. And at this point, we haven't seen Biden really move on that. They say that they're reviewing Cuba policy right now. Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, said a couple of weeks ago that right now Cuba is not a priority for the administration. So I think that message has gotten to the average Cuban, and I don't think they're expecting a huge change under Biden.
When we talk about Cubans here in the United States, have you been hearing from folks, and what are they saying? Are they excited about the change? Or, as you said, I mean, it's pretty much going to be the status quo in Cuba. So does that resonate with Cuban Americans?
Right. So that was not a big deal in Miami, where I'm based. Sure, it was covered on the news, but that's not something that people were talking about. People here are excited to hear if there is some sort of change to their political system in Cuba, that there's going to be greater economic freedom or freedom of speech, but not that there's a change of guard and they're going to continue with the same system. So no. While, you know, maybe 30 years ago, that would have been huge news on the talk of town here in Miami, you know, it wasn't.
Carmen Cecin is a reporter with NBCNews.com and NBC Latino. Carmen, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Tanzina.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.